All right, we are Monday, May 11th. It is 11:10-ish a.m. and we are at OCAM lecture. I need my chat screen up. I need my participant screen up so that I could see everybody. And okay, we are there. All right. I'm seeing most of the people from lecture this morning already here, ready to go. And we're going to kind of pick it up where we left off in lecture, which was, this is example day. So we had a day where we covered a lot of data. And that was last Wednesday. Today is not so much about the data, it's utilizing that data and trying to use those relative rates and things to make sense out of these chemical reactions. And so today is using the magic sheet more, excuse me, and I'll remind you guys where to find that. And actually we'll do that here in just a second. And we'll bounce back and forth between that magic sheet and using that magic sheet in order to figure out whether reactions are going to go SN1, SN2, E1, E2, and just a lot of examples. And that's what we're going to do in lab today too, is it's just example day. And we're going to do that all this week where we just run problems. And hopefully it will be more interactive as we go forward. So at first I'm going to try to show you my thought process and thinking, but there's no substitute for you going through and doing it yourself and developing your own intuition, your own thought process and thinking. So let me show you where that magic sheet is just so that you guys remember. And that is off of the Chem Ed study page. Let me go back here to the home page. Okay, so this is the chemed.study page, and over here on the right hand side you have the links for the different classes. So there's Chem 12 AL, and then underneath the lecture resources there are additional resources. So this link that is here, the additional resources, that takes you to the resource page, and the second one on that is nucleophilic substitution elimination guidelines. These are the guidelines that are just written out in a PDF format. So that's what we're going to open up. And it's a two-page thing. I usually print it on both sides of the paper so that you only have one page that you need to deal with. On the front page of that, it has the substitution and elimination reactions set up and the different pieces or the different components that go into each one, and a little bit about how to rank them. And then the second page is just more information on nucleophiles versus bases versus solvents. So just some different solvents that are here that help. And we will bounce back and forth and use this to help us make some decisions as we're going through. Okay, so the first reaction that I want to look at for lecture, and I had a different set that I was working for in lab, and I'm going to do the same thing in the afternoon lab. And anybody from the morning lab who wants to jump in and see more problems or see things again is welcome in any of these labs. You can mix it up if you want to. Don't feel that you just have to go to one if you can make both, or you want to come in and ask more questions or get more time to study these. You're more than welcome in any of them. So let's pick the first substrate here. We'll look at our first reaction. Okay, there's going to be a lot that's going on in this problem. We have some things that are really unfamiliar. And this is going to present a few challenges. Okay. When we look at this problem, the first thing we need to do is we need to figure out what the substrate is. I mean, we're going to classify each one of these categories, and our categories are substrate, the leaving group, the base or nucleophile, the solvent, and the temperature. And so when we take a problem and we start breaking a problem down, the problems can range from very simple to very complicated, depending upon the structure of the substrate itself and what's being put into it in terms of nucleophile and leaving group and all of that stuff. So we always tend to put the nucleophile, most of the time, almost always, the nucleophile or base should be above the arrow. Solvents usually go below, and any other conditions along with the solvent, such as temperature, usually follow below the arrow. The substrate is always the reactant. And really, the nucleophile or base should also be with the reactants, but in terms of organic chemistry, we almost always write them over the arrow. And so this is where things are set up. So the solvent, the temperature, the base, the nucleophile, the substrate, the leaving group, we have to find it within the substrate. And there's a couple of different things that that are in this substrate. So we've got a group that is here that we need to think about, and we have a group that is up here that we need to think about. So these two groups, let's take this piece and talk about these two groups. This piece here, this is a methoxy group. Methoxy is an oxygen connected to a CH3 group. And if that group were to break away, were to come off and give its electrons to the oxygen, it would create a methoxide ion. This is a strong base methoxide ion. It's about equally as strong as hydroxide ion. So it's a fairly strong base. The other group, this group over here, this is what's called a tosylate. I think there's actually only one S in tosylate. It's T-O-S-Y. So tosylate groups belong to a group of leaving groups that are called sulfonates. Sulfonates have a general structure that have some R group connected to them. This is a general sulfonate. And out of the sulfonates, there are some specific sulfonates. There is a triflate, CF3. There is a tosylate, there is a mesylate, so this one is called triflate because of the fluorine. Trifluorate, I guess, is what it is, but that's what we call as a triflate. This one is the tosylate because it's made from Well, the tosyl group, look at that. And then this one is mesylate. And so they're abbreviated OTF, OTS, and OMS. And these leaving groups are in order of increasing strength in terms of better leaving groups. So this is the best leaving group. And I wouldn't say the ones that are the worst, because tosylates tend to be the best leaving groups, or the sulfonates tend to be the best leaving groups out of all of the different types of leaving groups that we have. So these are all very, very good leaving groups. It's just that the triflate is the best of the leaving groups. And so when I look here, this thing is what is called a weak base, because of the delocalization that we experience for the anion can delocalize into all of these oxygens, and because of that is extremely stable and is a very weak base. So when I look at this substrate and I see these two things, one of these things is part of the substrate. The methoxy group is part of the substrate, whereas the tosylate is the actual leaving group. So when I look at the substrate itself, I ignore that piece and I just look at the tosylate. And so now what I want to do is I want to list the leaving group. The leaving group is the OTS group. And I would like to classify my substrate as being primary, secondary, tertiary, or there are some other ways that we sometimes classify these groups. Let me go grab the magic sheet and bring it in. And we'll bring this into the notes and we'll look at some of the classifications that we have for different groups. Okay, so down here, we have primary, secondary, and tertiary. So those groups, primary, secondary, tertiary, we have secondary, primary here. There's also methyl, and we've seen those before. What we haven't seen before are benzyl and allele. So we need to look at benzyl and allele. We should also look at alpha halo esters, alpha halo ketones, and alpha halonitriles as well, and what those groups look like. So these are some important groups to be able to recognize. When we look at an allylic group, that's the first one that I want to look at. We've used the word allylic before. So an allylic group is a group that is placed one position off the double bond. This is an allylic substrate. In much the same way that we would say this is an allylic bromide. Or an allylic alcohol. And why are these important? These are important because when I look at this position here, relative to what's going on over here, the double bond is sp2 hybridized, and an sp2 hybridized bond is trigonal planar. And because it's trigonal planar, there's very low sterics around it. So when I have a leaving group, which is in this location, there is really easy sterics or very low sterics to be able to have a nucleophile come in and attack that group at the allylic position. So the allylic position equals low sterics. And because sterics are the main indicator for SN2 reactions, low sterics means good SN2 reactions, meaning low E sub A for those SN2 reactions. So that's the allylic substrate. What is a benzylic substrate then? When I look at a benzylic substrate, and I'll have to shoot down below the bottom of my list here. A benzylic substrate then is built off a benzyl group. And I think we mentioned benzyl groups a while back too, that a benzyl group, this is a benzyl substrate, as opposed to an aromatic ring connected directly at the aromatic ring, which I call a phenyl group. So a benzyl substrate would be like this. This is a benzyl bromide. Or a benzyl alcohol. And these substrates are important because when I look at the substrate with a leaving group on it, the carbon that is here is sp2 hybridized. And much like the alkene and the allele groups, the allylic groups that I was looking at before, this carbon, as I come out here with my leaving group attached to it, this carbon being sp2 hybridized has very low sterics around it. So attack from the various positions around the sp2 hybridized carbon has low sterics. In the same way that the allylic groups did. So benzyl leaving group also equals good SN2 substrates. And then I had alpha halo ketone, alpha halo nitrile, alpha halo ester. What are those? Those substrates, when I look at a leaving group in this position, this is beta. What did I write them as? Let me check real quick. Alpha haloketone, alpha haloester, yeah. Depending upon how we do it. All right, so this is our alpha position. And in the alpha position, when we look at this, this center here is sp2 hybridized as well. We're alpha to an sp2 hybridized center. And all of these alpha to an sp2 hybridized center means lower sterics and good SN2 reactions. So this is my alpha halo ketone, my alpha halo, let's put a leaving group here, alpha halo nitrile, and we can also do an alpha halo ester with a leaving group. All of these are good SN2 substrates, which is why they are all listed under that magic sheet in that area. So when we go back and we classify this substrate that we're working on, that we're looking at, and we want to classify it as being primary, secondary, or tertiary, it's not just primary, secondary, or tertiary. It's also, could it possibly be an alpha haloester or an alpha haloketone? Or could it be a benzyl or an allylic group? So when we look at this one, what we see is that this one is really the benzyl substrate. So this is a benzyl tosylate. And we could classify it as primary, secondary, or tertiary. The oxygen that's connected, so this oxygen that is connected here at this carbon is a secondary carbon, so this is a secondary benzyl tosylate. These secondary benzyl tosylates, these are good SN2 substrates. So this is just a really good SN2 substrate when I look at it. And I'm going to move these over a little bit, see if I can fit this in. It doesn't fit in great there, but and I'll style it in red so it stands out a little bit. And maybe we'll see if I can get that just out of the way a bit. There we go. Okay. So I have a secondary benzyl tosylate. I have a tosylate as a leaving group. My base or nucleophile, I have to figure out what the base or nucleophile is. This is sodium azide. Azide has this structure. It is a negative charge on each of the nitrogens because they have two lone pairs. And the center nitrogen has no lone pairs and a positive charge. So the net, when I reduce this down, is N3 minus. And this is called azide. And so that's what my base or nucleophile is the azide. And we'll have to figure out sort of where that fits. Is it a good base? Is it a good nucleophile? I have all these questions, and we'll check the magic sheet, and we'll look at the magic sheet in a minute and see sort of where it ranks. My solvent is acetone. So the acetone solvent structurally looks like that, and my temperature is at 30 degrees C. All right, I want all of this, leaving all the other notes out, and go at the end of the magic sheet. And see if we can't start putting some of this together. To what all this stuff is and how it's going to play into my chemical reaction. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to the magic sheet and we're going to look up each one of these things. Secondary benzyl tosylate. Let's go to the magic sheet and see where that substrate puts us. That substrate only shows up here under SN2 reactions. So that substrate is telling me that this is probably predominantly an SN2 reaction because it doesn't appear in the E2, E1, or SN1 anywhere on the magic sheet. So my inference from this is that my substrate is telling me that this is an SN2 reaction. The leaving group, the tosylate, the leaving group under the magic sheet is the same for all four different reactions. So when I look at my leaving group, what I find is that for every single one of the reactions, it's the same. And the leaving group doesn't really help me decide which one of these reactions is going to take place. It can in some instances, but most of the time it doesn't, because the better the leaving group, the faster the chemical rate. So leaving group is hard to decide. However, what the leaving group does help me to relate is a little bit about temperature and what is a high temperature and what is a low temperature. And I can also just classify my leaving group. So I can go over here and I can find that tosylates are not even on here, although this would be sort of one of the closest areas to that tosylate I should put in here. It should be OTS, OTF, and OMS, that my mesylates, my triflates, those should, oh, those are nucleophiles. That's why those aren't in there. Where are they then? Those are also nucleophiles. I don't have them listed in terms of leaving groups. I only have them there. Yeah, so I can't classify it any more than that based on the magic sheet. So the leaving group is just telling me that this could go SN1, SN2, E1, E2, and that's not very helpful in terms of the leaving group. The nucleophile, the azide, let's go see if we can find that. That should be on here. And it is. So let's make that in green. So there's my nucleophile. It's a good nucleophile. And when I come down here and I look at it in this sheet, usually what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to look at a couple of different things. I'd like to focus on hydroxide and its pKa. That when I look at hydroxide ion, and this is a little bit redundant for people who had lab this morning because we talked about this quite extensively, that the pKa on hydroxide equals 15.7. If it has a pKa, and that's not for hydroxide, that's really for water because we're looking at the conjugate acid. So that's the pKa of the conjugate acid, which tells me how strong the base is. If I have a pKa of a conjugate acid, which is greater than 15.7, so something like CH4 that has a pKa that is like around 60, and so its conjugate is CH3-, that these things tend to be bases. So when the pKa is greater than 15.7 for the conjugate acid, those things tend to be bases. When the pKa is less than that, so something like HBr that has a pKa of minus 7.7, leading me to the Br minus anion, that these things tend to be nucleophiles. So I'm using the pKa values to assess whether or not something is a base or a nucleophile. And then I have the nucleophilicity constants that are here. And the nucleophilicity constants take more into account than just the basicity. They take into account the size and the polarizability. So we also spent time talking about that on Wednesday. And so we can see some things that are in here that have pKa's that seem like they should be, cyanides, I guess, fits into that. These all have pKa's that are less than hydroxide. So that's all fitting into my good nucleophile case over here. So these are all good nucleophiles. So where does nitrile fit? Well, nitrile has a pKa, which is lower, but a nucleophilicity constant, which is a 5.8. So it is a nucleophile. It fits into this category over here as a nucleophile, and it's not a strong base like some of the other things that might show up over there. And so I'm going to list it as a good nucleophile. Let's see, Eric, how can a good leaving group also be a good nucleophile? Yeah, I can answer that. Just got to run out of fine place to put it. A good leaving group is what we call a weak base. Something that comes off where the charge is very delocalized makes it more stable and easier for it to come off. So when Br minus comes off and I minus comes off, these are good leaving groups because these are weak bases. However, when we look at the nucleophilicity number at how good a nucleophile these are, we see that I minus is one of the best nucleophiles that I have, second only to phosphorus and sulfide that are on this list. And that Br minus isn't far behind that. That these things, because of their polarizability and because of their ability to be uncaged within the solvent matrix, allows them to also be good nucleophiles. So the question then becomes, well, do they operate as a leaving group or do they turn around and also operate as a nucleophile? And the question is not one in isolation, it's what are they competing against as a leaving group and a nucleophile? So when we think about these reactions as reversible reactions, and we have a leaving group coming off, and we have another nucleophile coming in, is the nucleophile that came in and attached, is that also a good leaving group, or is that a poorer leaving group, meaning that the equilibrium is going to shift towards that poorer leaving group side? So Eric, it's not a question in isolation of how can it be a leaving group and a good nucleophile. It's what is it competing against, and can it be outcompeted? So I think I'm going to hang on to that question. I think I've partially answered it, but I think that we will continue to answer it as we look at different examples. Okay, Eric? Where are we? So that nucleophile, what is that nucleophile telling me, that azide? That azide being a good nucleophile, when I look up here on my list and I look at nucleophiles, what I see is that I need a good nucleophile here, and that promotes SN2. That the other places, I need a strong base or any anionic base or no nucleophile. And so this is leaning, this good nucleophile is sort of leaning towards SN2 as well. So what we'll do is we'll come down here and we'll say this azide. I'm going to try to color code these two. So I was picking it up in green, that the azide is a good nucleophile, and that sort of supports an SN2 reaction. The solvent that we have here, the solvent being acetonitrile, is a polar aprotic solvent. And when we come up and we look at where polar aprotic solvents fall, what color have I not chosen? Let's do orange. Here's acetone, and that promotes SN2 and E2 bimolecular reactions. So when I go back down here, my solvent being acetone, that acetone is polar aprotic. And supports SN2 and E2 bimolecular reactions. And then temperature being high or low. What's a good color for temperatures to put in? 30 degrees Celsius. Temperature seems to be one of the hardest things to describe. And what I'm going to do is grab something off a note that I did this morning, and we'll bring this back into play. There we go. So how do I relate temperature to what's going on here? The way that I've thought about temperature is to think about it in terms of thermal energy, that the higher the temperature is, the more vibrational energy there is in the molecule. So as we turn that energy up, the molecule is vibrating faster. It's true that it is also moving with more kinetic energy, that the molecule is moving physically faster. But temperature relates not only to the motion of the molecule, but the internal vibrational energy within the molecule as well. That is also a component of temperature. And so when you turn up the temperature on a molecule, all of the vibrational modes start vibrating with more intensity. And so you get more vigorous vibrations. That means that there is the propensity for bonds to break. And that is when we increase the temperature enough on a molecule that we overwhelm the intermolecular bonding or the intramolecular bonds within the molecule, then the molecule can decompose and undergo decomposition reactions. So thermal energy is related to bond breaking, and Bond breaking is what happens when we look at a leaving group coming off. So we can relate temperature to leaving groups. And what I've done here is I've thought about my leaving group as being the ball and the paddle as being the substrate. And the bond connected between them. And so this is the paddle ball game. And what we're doing is we're looking to see how much energy it takes in order to break the bond. And when we think about a good leaving group, I'm thinking about like a heavier ball, almost like a tennis ball, connected with dental floss. So imagine a tennis ball connected with dental floss, or maybe even better thread, right? So that you've got just a spool of thread and you've connected the tennis ball to the paddle ball with a spool of thread. That's what a really good leaving group is. And so you take the ball, you toss the ball up in the air a little bit, you hit it with the paddle just really gently, and the thread breaks because the bond was extraordinarily weak. The leaving group was a super good leaving group. It was very stable under the conditions, and even a small amount of thermal energy is enough vibrational energy to cause that bond to break. And so temperatures that are fairly what we would think of as low temperatures, like room temperature, might actually be high because there's quite a bit of thermal energy in a high temperature like that. And so what we would say is that high temperatures would be anything greater than or equal to 25 degrees C, and that low temperatures are going to be substantially less than 25 degrees C. So low might be things like minus 78 in that case. On the other hand, if we have a poor leaving group, the poor leaving group is like a ping pong ball. And now that ping pong ball is connected by a piece of rope. And no matter how hard you whack that ping pong ball, you can hit it with all your force, with all your strength, and that rope just doesn't want to break. And so you can put a ton of thermal energy into this, and the bond just will not break because that ping pong ball just isn't coming off. So high temperatures here, we would say to be something that is refluxing or something well over 100 degrees. That might be a high temperature. And low temperatures would be anything under 100. And so temperature is relative to how good your leaving group is. So assessing temperature, I can't just give you a list and say, this is always high, this is always low. It's not like 50 and above is high and below 50 is low. It's relative to whatever the leaving group is. And so you have to understand the strength of your leaving group in order to understand whether temperature is high or low. So when we come back up here and we look at what our leaving group was, it was tosylate. 30 degrees to a tosylate on a place where a carbocation can build up. I don't know. This is a tough call. This one, I would say, is sort of in between. It's not really high or low. It's sort of in the middle. If it was refluxing, if it was 50 degrees or 60 degrees, I would say it's high. We're putting in some heat into that. But this is just really above room temperature. So just being above room temperature, I'm saying this is sort of in the middle. And so being in the middle, this could go SN2 or SN1, or it could go elimination, E1 or E2. So when I look at all of these put together, and particularly the substrate and the nucleophile, the substrate and the nucleophile are each positioning me towards SN2. The leaving group isn't helping me. So I'm not even gonna circle that. The polar aprotic leans towards also SN2. And because nothing else is really pointing towards elimination, I'm sort of got the majority of my topics here leaning towards SN2. So I'm gonna take all of these together and say, all right, this is looking like an SN2 reaction, and that I might have some E2 component to this. So SN2 would be major, and SN2s compete with E2. So E2 would be minor. And so now what I'll go do is I'll take and I'll draw both of those reactions out and get both of those products. And Let's do it here. So we have the tosylate, which was on a forward wedge bond. We'll put the hydrogen back in there too. And this one is going with sodium azide in acetone, 30 degrees C. My SN2 is going to be my major product. And I'm going to get an E2, which is a minor. And also, I'm not always asking you to draw both major and minor. Sometimes I only ask you for the major product in a chemical reaction. It's just that right now, as we're learning, I think it's valuable to look at the competing reactions and to say which one is minor. So don't always feel like you need to provide me with the minor product. Watch the question and watch what I'm asking for. And if it's just asking for the major, then all you got to do is draw the major, because sometimes the elimination product might be more complicated and take time to figure out and sort out with all the stereochemistry. Don't always have to do that. Okay, so we're going to do an SN2 reaction. And as we do the SN2 reaction, we're going to have the sodium azide come in from the backside and kick out the tosylate. And as it kicks out that tosylate, the reaction is occurring at a stereocenter. So this center right there is a stereocenter that is undergoing an SN2 reaction. Those undergo with inversion of configuration. So if I think about this substrate as being sort of flat and planar in its transition state, and look at the azide coming in and the carbon and my leaving group coming out, my leaving group is the tosylate, partial minus that's being picked out, partial positive. And then in order to get that structurally set, that means that I turned it around the wrong way. This is my aromatic ring system. Oh, my brain doesn't want to turn it this way. Give me a second. I think my hydrogen is on this side. And that's not the oxygen yet. That's another carbon that's in between. I think I'm this way. And that as that group gets kicked out, I'm getting inversion of configuration and the groups are going to get transferred to the other side. So when I draw this product, the way that I would draw it is to just invert the stereocenter such that now the azide came in from the backside and the hydrogen is now forward. That's the best way to draw that. So this is my SN2 reaction and then going through to my product. The E2 reaction, when I look to do the E2 reaction, I need to pull a proton anti-periplanar to the leaving group. So the leaving group is the tosylate, which is on a stereocenter. And the hydrogens that I'm looking at pulling are these two hydrogens. And when I go to pull those, I need to look at it sort of in a Newman projection to see how I'm pulling things or which proton I'm going to pull. So there's my two hydrogens, my hydrogen there and my OTS and my aromatic ring system. So if I pull the hydrogen, let's call this one HA and HB. If I pull HA, the base comes in and pulls HA, pushes electrons in, pushes out. Ooh, arrows are trouble today. Pushes out the tosylate. When that happens, the whole thing collapses down, and I'm going to get a bond that is going to look like this. The oxygen and the hydrogen are going to be on the same side, and the hydrogen on this side with the aromatic ring system are going to be on the same side, and that is a trans double bond. So that's one product. If I pull HB, I have to rotate the whole molecule in order to get things in the right orientation. So to get HB over here, I will have to rotate through. HA will have to be up there, and the O group down there, the aromatic ring system, and my tosylate, and my hydrogen. Now I can pull with the base, kick electrons in, push out the tosylate. That is going to give me a system where the two hydrogens, HA and on the backside H, are on the same side. And the aromatic ring system is on the same side. This is the cis double bond. So I'm going to get a cis double bond out of this, just showing you where each of the bonds come from. And in terms of these, I've got my three large groups connected together there with a lot of sterics. And here what I have is I have two groups together with sterics, and these two groups anti to one another. That anti is lower energy, and in the transition state, that's going to give me a lower energy in the transition state. So I didn't really need to do all that work, but I wanted you to see the E2 reaction and just talk about the E2 reaction a little bit. But what that does is it shows me my major and my minor products that came out of this. Okay, that's our first time through. And like I told the morning group, the first time through is always a little bit rough. These are hard reactions, and it just takes a little bit of time of going through these reactions to get the idea of what it is that we want to do. Let me grab the next substrate, and it's just going to take a lot of examples. So the more examples we go through, the easier this gets.
Hey, Jason?
Yeah.
Could you explain why you rotated the front side instead of just pulling off the HB? And
It needs to be anti-periplanar. That's a great question. That remember that in an SN2 or in an E2 reaction, the critical thing in an E2 reaction is that the leaving group and the proton be anti-periplanar to each other, so that when you pull it, that the electrons that are here can dump into the antibonding orbital. Actually, the antibonding orbital has the lobe sort of out this way. So my antibonding orbital had green and yellow. And we'll say that this bond is the one with electron density in it that's blue, and that when the base pulls the proton, we want the electrons to dump into the sigma star orbital. That means that they must be anti-periplanar. So in a Newman projection, I want my leaving group and the proton that I'm pulling to be anti to one another. For an E2 reaction. And so that's why when I wanted to pull HB, I had to make sure that HB was anti to the tosylate, whereas HA was anti to the tosylate in the first one. Does that help?
Yeah, I got it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the question. Okay, next problem. And each of these are selected with different reasons or purposes that I want to pull each one. Let's do this. Okay, how would we classify this substrate? Ooh, Eric, let's see. Relatively speaking, how strong does a base need to be for this reaction for an E2 elimination? Hydroxide or better. But it also depends on temperature. So I can't tell you, I can't say specifically that it's just about the base and give you a strength of base. It's also about temperature. Although there are some bases which are only bases and would have gone E2. So I think we're about to address that question, Eric. So hang on to that question as we go through this problem, and I think this is going to address it. Okay, somebody classify this substrate for me. Primary, secondary, tertiary. What do we say? Secondary. Finn's got the two fingers up. That's great with the camera on. I love it. Okay. Yeah, Colin, this is secondary. Okay, so this is a secondary substrate, but be careful, it's not just secondary. This is one of those alpha halos. It's an alpha halo aldehyde. It's alpha to an sp2 position. So yeah, to the sp2 carbon, which makes it pretty good SN2 substrate. So just being careful there that when we're classifying it, yes, it's secondary, but there's a little bit more to it. This thing up here, let's see if we understand what this is. This is potassium terbutoxide. This is K with an oxygen and a tertiary butyl group connected to it. So that's what that guy is. Tertiary butanol, this is the tertiary butyl alcohol. So this is a polar protic. And this temperature, minus 10, is looking pretty low, all things considered. I mean, if we think about room temperature as being sort of in the middle, although I don't always like to think of it that way. And when I look at the different groups, oh, my leaving group is a chloride. So when I think about the different leaving groups, and I think OTS, which is a better leaving group than iodide, which is a better leaving group than bromide, which is better than chloride, that out of my different various leaving groups that I have, that this is sort of, it's a good leaving group. Whereas the tosylate is a great leaving group. But good in the sense that this is sort of, okay, and that correlates into this temperature, making the temperature fairly low. Because I've got the ping pong ball attached to a rope sort of situation. So my temperature is fairly low. Now what I gotta do is I gotta put all these things together and figure out what they're telling me. So secondary alpha halo aldehyde. A secondary alpha halo aldehyde, when I go back to the magic sheet, let's see if we need to import it again, because I think I've got, yeah, a bunch of drawings on it. So let's get it again. We'll have it dumped back in here. That way I don't have to keep erasing it. and it'll just stay in the notes. And each one is unique to each reaction. Okay, so what we find is that in substrate, let's do substrate in blue, that in substrate, secondary alpha halo ketone alpha halo aldehyde sort of points towards SN2. But what we find is that secondary is everywhere. And because of this alpha halo ketone, I sort of lean a little bit more towards SN2, but none of the others are really off the table because of that. So when I look at the substrate up here, the substrate is maybe telling me SN2 a little bit more than some of the others, but because it's secondary, everything's on the table, which is always a little disconcerting and annoying. Leaving group doesn't really help us to prioritize, because when we go back and we look at leaving group, let's choose green for leaving group, that the leaving group is everywhere, and they're all the same, and that we don't change rankings based on leaving group per se. So leaving group doesn't help me to decide anything either. That's also telling me that the leaving group is saying SN2 is just fine as SN1, as E2 and E1, that's really not helping me much. This potassium terbutoxide, let's figure out where that is. For that, we need to come over onto this list and try to figure out where potassium terbutoxide is, or maybe we could do it up here too. So here, when we start to look at base, let's do base in red. What we need over here is for SN2, we need a weaker base than hydroxide. For E2, we need a bulky base, which is greater than or equal to hydroxide. For SN1, no anions. Well, potassium terbutoxide, when I think about that base, this is an anion. The fact that this has no anions knocks out this reaction, SN1. SN1 can't happen with potassium terbutoxide in there. And E1 says any anionic base. Okay, so it looks like SN2, E2, and E1. However, I need to know a little bit about this hydroxide ion sort of concept. And we started to build that in back here. We already started to look at the base sort of idea. But there's more to this. So let me copy this. Let's take this down here. And let's look at this base in more detail. It is true that when I think about a strong base being greater than or equal to a hydroxide, and a weak base being something less than hydroxide, that any of those things that are hydroxide-like, for instance, OCH3- methoxide, or ethoxide, OET, and to a degree, potassium terbutoxide, which I'm throwing off to the right because it's a little bit more basic than some of these others. These are all sort of hydroxide-like. They are approximately equal to hydroxide. However, this thing gets a different name to it. We call it a bulky base. And there are a couple of bulky bases. Another bulky base, which is even more basic, is lithium diisopropyl amide, LDA. And that these things are termed bulky bases. And the sterics that are around them, the tertiary butyl group and these diisopropyl groups create so much steric that these things have a hard time acting as a nucleophile, and that their primary role is as a base. That when you see these, you need to think of these as bases, and that they really don't do much else. They tend not to act as a nucleophile, and their action is in the name, bulky base. They are a base. So when I see potassium tributoxide or I see LDA, my instinct is to always think of them as a base, and that means elimination reaction. So when I see this here and I see bulky, that's potassium tributoxide or LDA, and there's some others, but those are the two primary ones that we see. And so that is telling me that I really need to pay attention to that, and that this is most likely an E2 reaction. Actually, I can just put that right on top, I think. And that this is predominantly an E2 reaction, and that it eliminates the SN2 to a degree, and that we're crossing off SN2. So as I come back to, where am I, down below, up above, I'm up here. So when I see that potassium tributoxide, that's really telling me that this is an E2 reaction. And I think the temp, when we go back and we look at the temperature, let's grab that now and we'll do that color as purple, I guess. Let's go see temp. Temp with this low promotes SN2. So that would tell me this one. And this one says high. And I've already decided that this was a low temperature. But the problem is, so temperature here we're saying is low. And the magic sheet is telling me SN2. But I've already said that this guy up here can't go SN2. So how do I reconcile this, my low temperature, with my SN2 reaction? The reconciliation of that is that potassium tributoxide, when it picks up a proton, it makes tertiary butanol and heat. That this reaction in pulling a proton is extremely fast and extremely strong. And because of that, I generally have to cool these reactions down so that they don't boil, so that the heat that is evolving doesn't run away and cause a runaway reaction, a reaction that is overheating, boiling vigorously, and could become a serious health hazard in terms of trying to run that reaction. So it just becomes a dangerous situation if I do this at room temperature or don't try to control the heat to some degree. And so sometimes I cool down a reaction, not because I want it to go a particular direction, not because I'm trying to direct it towards SN2 or E2 or whatever, but because I don't want the reaction to run away when I use a very strong base. LDA, for instance, so these reactions here, we usually run somewhere around minus 10 degrees when I use this reagent. If I use LDA reagent, LDA is even stronger and is oftentimes used at minus 78, even though I'm doing elimination reactions. And so even though elimination reactions are supported by higher temperatures, when you use bulky, strong bases, sometimes you need to use what are considered to be very cold conditions so that the damn thing doesn't explode on you when you do it. And so all of these little things that make interpretation more difficult. So what's more important, the lower temperature or the bulky base? The bulky base is the more important thing. And so when I look at this, I call this reaction on this, that the second I see a bulky base, I'm going E2 reaction. And it's the E2 that is going to take priority. Now, the leaving group supported E2. That was fine. There was no problem there. The, what else did I have? So my bulky base, my substrate, my leaving group, all of those supported E2. And that's what this reaction is. So I've got to go through and do an E2 reaction with this and pull this proton and find a beta hydrogen to pull in order to go through the E2 reaction. So let's take this one and look at how we're going to do the E2. First thing I need to do is decide where the protons are that I'm going to pull. So there is a proton which sits here, and two that sit here. And so I have three different protons essentially. And actually, I'm going to label them all. Let's call this HA, B, C, and D. So they are all independently labeled. HA is connected to an sp2 hybridized carbon. This one is off the table. That we're not pulling protons that are on sp2 carbons in order to do elimination reactions. We're looking for a proton which is on an sp3 hybridized carbon. This one is geminal. Geminal meaning that it's on the same carbon as the leaving group. In other words, this is the alpha proton. This one is also off the table. It is only these two, which are beta, and I need to decide which of these two protons is going to get pulled. And so I'm going to have to do a Newman projection, projecting down this bond, and I want to get either proton C or proton D anti to the leaving group, and pull it with the potassium terbutoxide. So the potassium terbutoxide comes in and pulls the proton, kicks in, kicks out the leaving group. That's the reaction I'm looking for, but I need to decide whether it's D or C that gets pulled in order to do this reaction. So let's investigate those Newmans and see what we get out of those Newmans. So in terms of those Newmans, I have the aromatic group going down. Oh no, aromatic group's going up. I'm sorry, in the based the way that I drew it. I'm turned around. All right. Now we're better. Aromatic group. We have HB on the right, HC on the left. Chloride is on the left. I think these were C and D. What's going on? This is HB that's over here. And coming down is the aldehyde that had HA on it. So let me make sure that my B's and C's are correct. Turn around. This would be D. And this would be C. I'm going to color code these to make it a little bit easier to track where things are going. Let's make HC hot pink and HD light green. Okay, so there's everything. And of course, there are bond rotations that can happen within this. And so this is not the only Newman projection I can have. I can also look at the Newman projection where I can rotate this. Ooh, I wonder if I could do this. This is going to be kind of cool. Come on, do it. Oh yeah. That was kind of fun. Didn't quite do it the way I wanted it to, but it was close. Just need to move it up a little bit. All right. So I went through a bond rotation. Oh, no, that didn't work. It dropped it back the same way. All right, screw it. Stop messing around and trying to be fancy. Redraw. Okay, so we want the aromatic ring over here. This is going to be HD and HC. That's what happens when I try to get too tricky. Okay. And anti to my leaving group, so let's get my leaving group in here too, that the leaving group is sitting here. And so when I pull the proton, electrons kick in, kick out the leaving group. That's going to create a molecule that is going to have the aromatic ring system and the HC sitting there, and HB and my aldehyde sitting over there. And that is going to look like this. I get a double bond. I get the aromatic ring system. And I get the aldehyde. And HC is still in place in that position. This one, B minus, pulls a proton. Electrons push in, kick out chloride. I go through and create now the aromatic ring on the lower side and HD up there and HB is next to it and the aldehyde down there. So that one, no you don't, that one looks like this. Actually, I don't need to draw those two. I can leave those two off. Okay, and so analyzing these two for sterics, what I see is that my two large groups, my ring and my aldehyde are anti, whereas all three big groups over here are gauche. So this one is going to be the minor, and this one the major, in terms of looking at which proton gets pulled and what product I'm actually making. So when I come back and I'm going to draw the product for this, we're going to finish this reaction out. I'm going to finish it out down here. Minus 10 degrees C. This gives me a product. Which is that. I also get some of this. This is major. E2. This is minor, E2. And I also get another product, which is really minor. And that was from the SM2. Because whenever we have an E2, E2 and SN2 compete. So I've gone through and I've looked at where each one of those products came from and how to put each thing together. The dogs decided to go off. Okay. I kind of knew that this was going to happen in terms of this class, that when we start going through these examples, I generally only make it through two or three examples during the lecture. And because of that, what I've done is I've taken the lab time and I am borrowing heavily from the lab time to go through many more examples of these and just to break down all of the different things that can happen. And so this afternoon, yeah, we'll be doing the same thing on Wednesday. So we'll go through just more examples on Wednesday. And between now and Wednesday, what I'm going to do is I'm going to email out this afternoon the worksheet that I've got that has the answer key that I want you guys to work on so you can work on your own pace. And I will keep pulling problems from those and going over problems from those, but we'll be able to go through them at a faster pace. So on Wednesday, what I'm hoping is that we can click through between lab and lecture at least 7 or 8 of these things and just click through them in a faster way. And what we'll start doing is we'll say, all right, we'll put up the picture and we'll say first impressions. What does this look like, first impressions? Is this SM1, SN2, E1, or E2? And we should be able to get to a point where we can look at it and we can say, ah, yeah, that's a SN2 reaction. No, that's an E2 reaction. And we may not always get it right, but that'll be our first impressions. And then we'll do a slightly deeper dive. And we'll keep addressing all of these different situations that come up, like bulky bases, low temperatures, and how temperature relates to the base, or how temperature relates to the leaving group, or all of those things. And yes, Nicole, I'm going to get this up on the website today because I'm going to spend my office hours updating everything. And I realized Dina reminded me that I did not get last Wednesday's lectures up. So I'm going to get those up as well today. So we'll try and get everything updated today. And by the end of the day, I'll put up the afternoon lab ones as well. And I will also email out that list of problems so that you guys have that to work from as well, trying to get you as many resources as I can. Okay? How are you guys doing? Because we are up at 12:31 now. So I'll open it up for questions. We'll stay online for questions. If you want to log off and you want to catch me this afternoon for lab, and anybody who joined in this morning, who wants to join in this afternoon's lab to get a little bit more practice, you're more than welcome to do that as well. And yeah, just try to give you guys as much information as I can, okay?
Can you go back up to the allylic notes? I didn't get that fully.
The allylic. When you say allylic, what do you, describe a little more what you want me to go to?
You wrote down like allylic bromide and like allylic alcohol, and you had like a little definition.
Yeah. Those are the benzyl. Allylic was probably up here. There you go.
Yeah, that's it.
So I think Finn's just catching up on some of his notes. If anybody's any questions that they want me to hit, feel free to fire them off. You're welcome, man.
All right. I think that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Finn. I'll see you this afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody else good? Dina, you're not at work today. You're at home. No, you're at work. Which is why you're
Yeah, that's one. I went.
Okay, it looked like you were at home. That didn't look like quite a work setting, but you've got a nice pretty spot there where you're sitting, so.
Yeah, I'm at my client's house. I'm going to take it for a walk soon. And
okay.
See them.
Okay, alrighty. All right, we'll see you later then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.